Okay.
So I'm very glad to give a talk here. So basically, I mean, today I will just talk about how to rethink about the issue of the electric weak baryon genesis after we have collected all of those LHC data. And this is based on my work with Nike Yue and also Wei Tong Huang, who is my student, and also Professor Tao here, and some other faculties and postdocs students in ITP. So first, I will just give a very general brief collection and tells us that how usually the Higgs physics are very deeply collected with the electric weak baryon genesis. And then I just talk about the CP violation, the electric dipole momentum, and the Higgs global fields, and see how the interplay actually have a very important consequences. And then I will talk about how the electric weak phase transitions are related to Higgs physics. And then I probably mention very briefly about the future direct measurements. And finally, I give a summary and outlook.
So Miko, you can put the garbage can in to keep the door open a little bit.
So I mean, first, as we already know, I mean, what's one of the biggest problems right now is just the origin of mass, which you have this very important physics diagram here, but there's only one particle missing at that time, which is the Higgs particle. And we know that now actually we already find it, and it's a scalar excitation which are actually responsible for these Higgs mechanisms, which is the origin of the mass. And definitely we have discovered the Higgs, which is great. And so after we have discovered the Higgs, then with more and more data accumulating, so basically we definitely would know more about the Higgs couplings, for example, the ratio of Higgs coupling to vector bosons over standard model and fermions and other things. So basically with more and more of those data, we can know that actually how well we can know the electric weak symmetry breaking. And definitely, I mean, with timing on various different the LHC, we will know much better. But there are some other questions we should think about, especially that since we know better and better the electric weak symmetry breaking and the Higgs physics.
So can I pick on the same point that I picked on in Origin's talk, which is the origin of mass? The proton gets 99% of its mass from gluons. So the origin of mass is not...
Well, I would say that the origin mass is from the elementary particles.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So...
This was your question last week, too.
Yeah. I have a little bit of a... I'm on my hobby horse here. So I just want to point out.
Yeah.
I also mentioned, actually, in my talk, that baryon mass, now in yours, comes from lambda QCD, not from this.
Yeah, we know that body is...
Okay, then it's basically the...
We all know that, so let's continue. So
basically then it's the issue of the origin of the mass of the elementary particle. So but simultaneously in the orthogonal way, we want to think about so how this mass is generated in the universe and in the time consequences. Actually, the answer is simple. It's just after the universe is cooling down, and basically after we have the electric weak phase transition, so we jump from the unbroken phase to the broken phase, and then basically all the masses are turning on. So basically that's how the mass are generated in the universe. And simultaneously, we want to ask a related question, which is how the positive matter is generated. This question is important in the sense that you will find that what the electric weak baryon genesis is doing is exactly that they generate the baryon line symmetries, which is the positive mass particles simultaneous with the particle mass generation at the electric weak scale, which is actually you have those particles which is in the unbroken phase, and then they travel through the bubble wall and gain their mass, and simultaneous they get their asymmetry charges. So that's why I believe those two questions, they are very important and related, and one can even prove them from effective theory. And definitely we know these Sakharov conditions, which we want to mention again. And the more importantly that we don't have enough CP violation, Because standard model, you just have this quark message, which have two large hierarchies. And also, they don't give you the very strongly first-order phase transition, which is kind of out of some equilibrium condition. So first of all, we're looking at this picture. So we have a strongly first-order phase transition. Then it's just like you are boiling the water. So basically, first you are in the unbroken phase, and then you have these bubbles of broken phase that are expanding, and then give the strong first-order phase transition. So more accurately, we are looking at the bubbles. So when the bubble is expanding, then the important thing is that you have a particle with their masses and their complex phases. And in particular, they have a complex phase that depends on the Higgs wave. And that when they are passing through these bubbles, they actually induce a time-dependent changes for the phases. And these time-dependent phases will essentially give you a chemical potential and then give you a total charge of something which are related to the particles. And this total charge of something, eventually they just, by diffusion, they change into baryon asymmetries. When they diffuse into the broken phases, if the spherion is seized, then basically they are frozen and they are left there. So this is why you need a first order strong first phase transition. So from a diagram point of view, that suppose I have some particles which are probably coupled to Higgs, and definitely this will change all of those Higgs, for example, four-point functions and whatever you have. And then they will contribute to the Higgs effective potential. Simultaneously, if I have new particles, if they are charged, for instance, they will definitely change, for instance, the Higgs two gluons and the Higgs two photons with a Higgs mass insertion here. So basically, that's why in those any kind of Higgs portals, if the new particles are colored or charged, then they will contribute both, and they are definitely there's a correlation. But more importantly, actually, one can prove is for the CP violating sources, because as I have said before, that when you need a space-time, the web-dependent phases when the new particles are passed through the bubble wall, which give the source of a CP violation for baryon number asymmetry. And definitely for these masses, you just do a Higgs background field expansion. And at the leading order, this gives you the Higgs chi-chi couplings. And you get into the loop, you get the effective operator for glue Higgs and the Higgs to the diphotons, as long as I have said, they are colored or electric charge. So more importantly, that this complex mass term, simultaneously, they give you a contribution, which is the CP order component of these two diagrams. And definitely adding the CP order component for these two diagrams, that will change your Higgs global fit and everything. And again, we expect that there is a very strong correlation. So overall, since this actually the Higgs glue and the Higgs gamma vertex are so critical on the Higgs global feeds, they're the most important production and the decay channel. And simultaneously that we would learn a lot, actually, given the new physics which helps for the electric weak phase transition and the new CP violation sources actually coupled to the Higgs. So here is just some very recent results. And then from those results, what can we learn? So first, I just talked about how these data are related to the CP violating sources. So this is just some general collection. So as long as you have some new particles, which essentially must be fermions, then they have CP even and a CP all component. So they can have the all Higgs glue and Higgs photon. You know, actually, this should be effective operators. So now I take this kind of same picture again, but now with some a little bit of mathematics, but extremely simple. So still, I start with a complex phase, a mass term which is complex, and they have a very important phases here, which is web dependent. And again, I suppose actually these phases has some own its own. You know, when they are derivatives, they are actually coupled to some currents, which I call it X. And X usually is some kind of charges you measure for this particular particle kind. And the important thing is that when these particles are passed through the bubble wall, so basically, since they have a web-dependent term, essentially they will introduce a term which actually gives you the time variation for these phases. And definitely with some universal delta V, which jumps against the wall, and also the velocity and the wall width. So these are extremely universal, you know, combinations apply to whatever models. And building like a chemical potential term, this actually always introduce some kind of, you know, overall asymmetries. And in the end, after some diffusion and blah, blah, you convert them to bions, and then they just froze. So now let's start with an extremely simple model. It's not a model, just suppose I have a particle, which is x, and has a complex mass term. So it's just like this, very general. And now I just expand around the web. At the leading order, this gives me the Higgs XX couplings. And then I just do an axial rotation, or just insert this in the Feynman diagram. And simultaneously, you get this kind of, you know, additional ones from anomalies, which is just like the theta terms for the QCD axions. So the important thing is that you get these coefficients, which is actually the V times the derivative of the V over the web. So this part actually is precisely the one that you needed here, which actually is the one that universally actually become the real important sources for all of the particle CP violating sources.
Just, you might have said this already, but this has to be spontaneous CP violation?
No, actually, the subtlety is that the kind of CP violating sources in the and the asymmetry generation of the electro weak baryon genesis can be understood back from the spontaneous baryon genesis at the very classical level at the, you know, a little bit didn't go to too much detail of the resonance effects and other things. So basically, I mean, those spontaneous baryon genesis, as you can see, the paper from the Nielsen's and, you know, those people, and they also invented the electroweak baryon genesis. I mean, the thing that definitely I can give you a closed time path integral provident calculation for something, but I just want to use this because just they are extremely simple and very elucidative. So basically, as we can see, that as long as our complex mass term with whatever fermions which induce actually either a Higgs glue-glue or Higgs photon-photon, you know, couplings with the coefficients is just this, which looks like a Higgs low energy theorem that you can apply. And these precise terms with which we actually contribute here, and just exactly why we always have all kinds of the CP violating sources there. But very unfortunate, I mean, since they looks like this, one may wonder if for a general, you know, n by n matrix, one can apply some kind of Higgs low energy theorem there. But the difficulty is that usually you really need a Jaworski invariant, you know, CP violating quantities in order to make probably a more collection. And I mean, right now I still have to think about it. So at least for one particle, this collection is very clear, just proportional. And now I just have, you know, some kind of simple electroweak electro operator parameterization. And then how can we do these things realistically? Yeah, you just have all of the data, do a fit. So, and definitely for one to talk about the real collections, one have to go to the models. So here I just go to the two Higgs doublet model, the type two. So basically, I mean, I have two phases from M1, 2, or lambda 5, so I can do the mass eigenstate.
In the separating case, there are two more couplings, yeah? Lambda 6 and lambda 7.
Right. I just, you know, just for simplicity.
Because in this case, only lambda 5 is.
And then one can calculate the Higgs couplings and the you know, and the one important thing is that this alpha B is actually measure the mixings between the CP even Higgs and the second the lighted CP even Higgs and the CP odd Higgs. And this alpha B, since we always assume 125 is the lightest CP even, so this actually measures that how much 125 has the component of CP odd cases component. And this alpha B will be in a in the general parameter space, they are related to the Kc, which is the, to some extent, the change of the web for the phase jumpers. But on the other hand, I mean, for simplicity, in some parameter region, that these two are the same order.
So you were, and Mr. Correa, you were saying you were not convinced that you can use these low energy effective theorems to do the same thing with CP violation. I didn't understand what you said.
No, I think that the thing is here, basically, you can always relate the d theta over dv. And this quantity clearly is just the size of the imaginary pieces of, you know, GG, Higgs, or Higgs photon photon. And this part, on the other hand, when you really relate it to the CP violating sources, they depend on model. Not only that they depend on, for example, the wall speed, you know, the width, blah, blah, blah. They also depend on your particular models, which changes your diffusions, because you diffuse the charge X into the charge bions, and also, you know, the converting rate for the Wicks fermions. All of those depend on different models. And those parts are, of course, the model-dependent part. But to some extent, you can assume it's order one, unless there's some cancellation.
So this, could you go back to San Francisco? I see. What is in the denominator is the would be CP of mass, right? So MH plus craft and lambda form and lambda 5.
Total reaction. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, that is what we usually call MH square. Okay, that is not a mass identity. Okay, fine.
So basically, and now one can do a global fit. And definitely, this is 1 sigma, yellow is 2 sigma, and this is 3 sigma. And the one important thing is that actually when the tangent beta is close to 1, that you can find that there is somehow a sort of flat direction along the CP violating direction. And so this is the CP violating direction. This is important, and the reason is that actually because somehow when the tangent beta is almost close to 1, that the contribution from the top and the bottom and the W's, they always combine in a way that is always something like a sine square theta plus cosine square theta, which is almost 1. I mean, so basically, that's why, I mean, they somehow, when they add it together, it's kind of the chi-square has a flat direction here. And also, so these are the EDM constraints, which I will mention later.
There is another, so there is also
weak
boson fusion, right?
Right. So here somehow I just, yeah. I just use
that would have a stronger dependence.
Right. So here I didn't do a very careful, you know, it's just hands waving first order feed. So and then there is a bound from EDMs. So basically, those are the Bazzi diagram that people always mention. And the important thing is that, so there's an interesting paper by Markin Pospolov and Rizzi. So basically they say that since this actually is a Higgs 2 diphoton, so your CP order case of a Higgs diphoton is really related to this one. And naively, you look at this diagram, you have a feeling that it's proportional, which I will mention later that this is not the case. But anyway, so they will say that this naive constrain this to order 0.1, and after Acme result, this goes to 0.01 or even smaller.
I think that this is completely not satisfactory.
Yeah, I know. I will mention that. I agree with you.
Okay,
good.
We can comment, because in order to have those simulating phases, you need something more, right?
Yeah.
And then,
I mean, I will mention this later in an extremely simple way. You just look at a diagram, I draw, and everything.
Well, actually, with this paper we did with UA, did full two Higgs doublet model with exactly this setup.
Right.
And it's true that the light Higgs effective theory is not realistic.
It's not realistic.
You have the charged Higgses, you have W, you have all that.
Yeah. But still, no. Still, the important thing is that even you consider only the lowest important degree fringe, which is just 125 Higgs, you still find that is nonsense.
Okay.
And since that one is actually the one numerically contributed.
That is even more interesting. Then continue.
Numerically the most dominant one. You will see that why anyway.
Okay.
Well, but I will mention that later.
So
anyway, so particularly in this particular case, I have top and W, they cancel also exactly almost at the tangent beta equals 1. So tangent beta equals 1 in this CP violating Higgs system is really somehow the sweet spot. As you can see. And then one can calculate the CP violating sources and also change the CP violating sources by diffusion into the charge densities, and then the weak spherum will convert them into the total net baryon density.
Can you go one slide back? It's just So is tan beta 1 also the sweet spot if you assume standard model results for all measurements? Or?
No, because in this case, you also need the CP violation. Is it? But your standard model that doesn't have the.
So this tan beta 1 is the best for.
It's actually not exactly at 1, you know, numerically. It's some kind of numerical coincidence. It's not, you know, you have 1 plus some perturbation. No, it's a.
This is not from the fit to the Higgs state.
This is EDM. This is EDM.
But in the fit to the Higgs data, I'm a bit confused about something. So the contribution that you get from to Higgs data, Higgs gamma, for example, that would not, it doesn't really interfere with the.
Right, exactly.
So in reality, you are looking at things that are totally different order of magnitude, correct? So
if, for instance, if you look at this plot, because the atlas somehow still have the enhanced dipotons, and clearly you can see that it actually prefers a non-zero, you know, alpha, which here is the purely alignment limit, which is exactly as the standard model, which alpha minus beta equals half pi or whatever. So and also you can see that the standard model doesn't fit so well. Only the large CP violating phase fits well, which if you have a enhanced Higgs diphoton. And clearly this is because the non-interference effects of the, you know, CP violations in the Higgs diphoton, right?
But what is the effect you get? Because I thought that actually the contribution you get from having a CP violating, so the CP violating contribution is much more constrained by EDMs. I cannot read exactly what is in those.
Oh, so basically the EDM constraints are here. And as I have said, this is because precise there is a cancellation between the W and the top. So usually, for instance, if here, then you know, you are very constrained.
Can you say what are the colors to start with?
Yeah, right. So basically, as I have said before, so this is 1 sigma, 2 sigma for yellow, and this is 3 sigma, just like the kind of same color that you.
And those are the best fit to one.
Yeah. That's fit for the Higgs. Production decay or channel.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can look at these are the exclusion for the EDMs. But this is the before ACME. I will show you the one after ACME because my paper is before the ACME. Okay, so now there is a question that what happens with CP violations after ACME, right? So actually, I say it wrong here. So this the 10 to the minus 2, not the 10 to the minus 3. Anyway, I didn't change here. But so we have a much tighter bound from ACME. So ACME is really a great experiment. And then, so what happens for CP violating searches? If one just expects this to be very small, then what can we do about it? So in a very general background, that do we really need to have to seek for the direct CP violation at LHC? Is that really important? And is this complementary to other things like neutron EDM or mercury EDM in the future? So actually, the color here is too bad. So basically, I have to tell you the curve anyway. So basically, the curve, which is this. Anyway.
Highlight a white spot in the
middle. Yeah. So somehow, you know, anyway. So the. I don't know why the color become like this.
Okay,
so,
but we can see.
Yeah. So basically, you know, it's very, very constrained. But still, especially in the purely alignment limit, I mean, they're not really exactly alignment. It's just alpha equals minus beta equals half pi. So in that limit, you still have a relatively big room, and I will mention that. I will talk later. So now, actually, how to think about this ACME results? And clearly, we know that effective theory doesn't really apply to these Bazzi diagrams. But on the other hand, it's a very good way that you use effective theory to think about it, especially that the dose coefficients are simply the coefficients of for those Higgs diphoton get into the EDM by those mixings from the anomalous dimensions. And you have those log terms. But the important thing is that as long as I sum over all the contributions, it always looks like this, which tells you that when you get into these Higgs diphoton diagrams, into the Bazzi diagrams, this is just like the interference. And the more important thing is that usually what people consider is only this one, which you just say that I have a CPU violation coming from the Higgs diphoton, you know, loops. And that's when this becomes odd. And usually I assume this one is even, which is usually not the case, actually. Yeah. And then you have this, you are very constrained. However, the important thing is that as long as my CP violation is from the Higgs sector, which means that my 125 actually is a mixture of CP even and CP odd. So in this case, actually, you have a CP violating Higgs to electron couplings. And precisely that actually this diagram is like just like interference, it's these two diagrams. So one CP violating source is from Higgs diphoton, the other CP violating source is from Higgs to electron, which exactly comes from this mixture MAH term. And this always happens in many, many examples. So it's not that something I just tune, you know, anyway. So now actually we look at this plot again. The important lesson that we can learn is that still you have a large region around the tangent beta equals 1. But the important thing is that the neutron experiment can cover this region. And definitely one should remind that there are the very big uncertainties that you can flip up and down. But still, this is very important. And more importantly is that this cancellation can definitely happen for different models like neutron ETLM, chromic EDM, probably not in the Weinberg operator. But the important thing is that since there are too many this QCD coefficients in, so there's no way that the cancellation region will happen in the same place. Which means that all of those cancellation regions, they will be probed by the other EDM experiment. And this tells that in a very generic way that the electron EDM is always complementary to other kinds of neutron EDM, mercury experiment, and blah, blah, blah. And all of those things should be pushed, you know, forward. So this important and interesting region, which just use the central value for the neutron EDM fields, can be greatly, you know, deducted in the future. And this is definitely, I believe, is a very important support for the future neutron EDM experiment. And definitely one can wonder that whether or not up to 2018 or 2019, the direct CP violating experiment will compete with this. And they are very complementary, and I think it's very interesting.
We don't have any data on the Higgs coupling to the first generation, right? So it could be suppressed, and then none of these bounds would apply.
Right, right. But the thing that then probably one, actually, I will mention another cases which I'm working with Michael and Tao, that some new sources have off-angle contribution. So in that case, probably suppressed or something. But usually that requires you have some model buildings in the flavor. And of course, that's a possibility, I agree. And I can also look at the MSM CP violations. So in these cases, I mean, one can seek for the top plus Chargino. For instance, the tops actually where the CP violation are mostly come from the mixing, which come from the loop diagrams. And clearly that increased this AT and decreased the mu, which increased the mixings, which gives some results for the tops. And also the Changinos, since their masses are mostly depends on mu and so anyway. So the two actually you can also find a very nice canceling region. And those are neutron EDM and mercury constraints.
So I have a question just about the. This is taken from CP Super H.
Yeah, yeah. And
does this have the wrong anomalous dimension?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And we have been talking about this.
Yeah, so I just wondered, so probably the mercury
and
the neutron.
I know exactly. And actually, I would doing very hard now to just debug the code and change you know the some pre coefficients.
You say that there is a wrong number of dimensions.
Yeah, yeah, and I should say Michael and the group will find it first. So I deposited it and then from
there. It has the wrong sign.
So I think the story.
It actually runs.
So
what's been used in CP Super 8?
Did you tell me or any of the others?
We noted it in our paper, and I
not that they, everybody reads your paper.
So the place that it is wrong is the sign of the, well. There's two.
You can tell me so we can check.
But
I think
it's allergic to what it is. It's for the chromo EDM, and so it actually gets weaker as you run down in scale. But there's also an anomalous dimension matrix. And two groups have actually calculated the full matrix now. It appears in the literature.
So I should also mention one another thing, which is your collaborator, Jessica Lee. They published many of those papers, and I suspect all of those results have some problems. And the important thing that when I look at your references, so all of the papers I think currently follow this paper by Prinas. And they are, you know, that paper. And that paper somehow is the origin which you follow from other papers that they have a sign issue.
So we should change.
Yeah, no, it needs to be changed.
Who computed the anomalous dimensions?
Well, two different groups did. I mean, Mark Wise and collaborator computed it.
When?
I think it was in the 80s. And Dick Arnowitt and company are the ones that are cited by Prannath, and they have the wrong sign.
Right.
And so it's been verified that the Y's at all calculations.
So the interesting thing that you have found that actually the right solution also has its own trains, and the wrong solution has its own trains. And the two somehow, the right solution somehow mentioned the wrong solution, but wrong solution somehow never mentioned the right solution. And then the superstition actually to some extent.
Do they meet in conference? Do they never meet in conference?
I don't know. I mean, I tried very hard to follow, you know.
Well, it's just one of these things that propagated in the literature, and unless someone really went into detail and checked, you wouldn't know.
Who found a mistake or error?
So this was.
So, for example, you can see the paper by Giudice and also this.
There are two groups that calculated it correctly. One is Jordi De Vries and his collaborator, and I forget the name of the other group, but they're both consistent.
Okay, and then what year approximately?
Last year.
So it was just for many years people saw that anomalous dimension is wrong.
Yeah.
It's very similar story with Winder computation GGG3G.
Yes.
You remember, Mr. Dipo?
Mm-hmm.
So he did the computations, and it was many conferences and stuff like that. And finally, people said, look,
so
actually anomalous dimensions have been computed many years ago by this Rafson Dimarozov, who did it correctly. So we have a similar story with Winder.
So, and also, I mean, in this case, we tried very hard, and it's possible that you can get the correct 125 under the diphoton rate. There's another possibility that one used the tau plus tau, but somehow we didn't find to get the correct 125. But I still think it's interesting to think about it. So this is just the EDM, and definitely one should think about the Higgs mass.
But I don't understand, what are the phases here? So.
What do you mean by, oh, the, actually, so sorry about that. That's my mistake. I should tell you the full setup. So basically, I think here we choose one of the, so basically we choose this, the phases for phi mu, to be 90 degree or something like that. And then we scan.
And then what is the phase of AD?
I think this one will choose them to be zero. So there is only one single phase.
Okay, could you shut, and then what?
Yeah, how come, I have no idea how to read that.
What are the square masses here? So there's a lot of information that you need to see here. So What are the sources?
I think all of the other important things are irrelevant, except for the stop and also the charging.
Yes, I think that Carl's question is, what is the connection between these two plots and the discussion in the effective theory?
Is that your question or no?
Yeah, basically.
That could be my question, but this.
You want to load the details that for other parameters.
It is a CPU mixing of the.
Through the loop
then
effect.
I don't know several things. So what is the charge Higgs mass?
Charge Higgs mass?
Yes.
We should discuss a little.
Everything is determined by several AD mu, of course, the phase, the relative phase of this, charge Higgs mass, and of course, what is relevant is the ratio of AD over MS, right? So this fixed quantity, the source spectrum. Anyway, I want to understand the.
Yeah, because I somehow, because I have too many things to talk about, I only copy the final. Sorry about that. I should put it. Anyway. So, but there are definitely other possibilities which are the CP binary sources come from off-diagonal masses. And one of the examples is that I work with Paul Liu and Michael, which we have a PRL, but that's a long time ago. We are wanting to explain this B sub S, you know, anomalies, and also looking to for the future. The other day, this Tabachon dimion, and also this B.
So, that was the original motivation.
But the important thing is that still we give the prospect, you know, signals for the LGCB and other things, even regardless of this. That's what we are saying. So originally,
you really don't want to be in the parameter space where the anomaly is explained
anyway.
So I'd rather have it go away.
So
that's why you want to understand.
So but why don't you explain the plot?
But actually, this plot is the new plot we go to the full detail of the model, and this part actually is the B2 S gamma bound, and this is the BAU. So I somehow didn't draw the one that for the EDM and other things, but somehow we expect them to be small. And
I think Marcel is asking, what are the axes?
So basically, the x-axis is kind of off-diagonal masses for the BS. And why is kind of the phases?
But now we jump to two Higgs double model.
No, it is kind of two Higgs double model, but not a type two.
It's kind of a type three.
So the
x-axis is kind of like a off diagonal Yukawas. Yeah, and why is the off diagonal CPV phases? But this diagram doesn't have too much. You know, one with the CP violations.
It's not the best figure. The key point
is
that, you know, the parameters that lead to B sub S transitions, Yukawas and phases can be right such that you get the right baryon asymmetry.
Yes.
And it's consistent with current phenomenology. And then there are, but with better results from LHCb, you could constrain this parameter space more tightly. So everything like B to S gamma, all that kind of stuff is included. But it's an interesting, it's likely to evade the EDMs much more easily than a generic type 2 Higgs doublet model or type 1 Higgs doublet model that Jing was discussing earlier.
But still, we need a little bit more.
Yeah, we have some work to do, but it seems a promising direction.
So now, I mean, after talking about this, I hope that people feel relieved that you know, CP violation, no problem. We still should try to.
Brad, no problem.
try very hard on the direct CP violating searches, which is.
All these experimental bounds are useless.
I think so.
Theory matters.
We are learning.
So now we talk about electric weak phase transition. I think for the purely direct search for CP violation, since I don't have time, so at the very late, after the end of talk, I may just grab some results for that. So first of all, we just talk about classification. The issue for the electric weak phase transition and the Higgs physics at the very rough look, you just think, oh, of course, because zero temperature, you know, depends, determine your finite temperature effective potential, and definitely they are very deeply collected. But the thing that when you look at the details, especially the phase transition itself, has too much influences from the cosmology. So basically, it's not kind of purely a field theory that you can always very, you know, beautifully play with it, not just like the CP violation. So basically, here I just give a very rough classification for those things. So usually, you can have new particles which works as a Higgs portal. They are either color or electric charge or both, coupled to 125. You can also have multi-Higgses, like two Higgs doublet model, two Higgs plus a singlet, one Higgs plus singlet, blah, blah, blah. And especially for those new singlet mixed with the Higgs, they have a much you know, lower bound for the light states. Also, the singlet Higgs can couple to the singlet scalars can couple to the Higgs, but they don't get a web. So in this case, they don't mix. If they don't mix, then basically you have much, much weaker bounds. But still, the future, for example, the T-Lab and the other experiments may give you some constraints, but they are very indirect. I mean, there are so that's certainly other possibilities that you consider various different stage of the jumping. I think Michael probably has a color transition. Is that?
Well, one possibility is color. But, I mean, that goes under your first category.
Oh, okay. So anyway, so basically, I think that there are definitely various different possibilities that one can explore, especially consider the various different non-conventional cosmology. So let's look at the simplest case. So basically, it's just a Higgs portal, and then you have these color representations, and definitely, you know, you have the mass which don't come from electroweak symmetry breaking, and you have the mass coming from electroweak symmetry breaking. The important thing is that for a single scale of this, and so alpha, you can also plug in to get all of those Higgs diphoton, Higgs gluon, blah, blah, blah. Important thing is when alpha is always positive, then you enhance the gluon production and suppress the Higgs diphoton. So these are the Higgs fees. The important thing that when we do this actually is the first round of Higgs data. So at that time, the suppressed gluon production and enhanced diphoton is preferred. It's not like nowadays anyway. But the important thing, as I have said, the alpha smaller than zero actually, so alpha bigger than zero, that smaller than zero is relatively favored.
So do you include does this include bounds from color breaking
backward and so on? No. That actually, when we calculated the one for the MSM, we include. But for this very, you know, toy model case, we didn't.
So this is just, where the delta CG and delta C gamma, so where is the phase there? I'm sorry.
Fade?
So what is this? Variations from one from
so,
the standard model value and then what?
So basically zero means the purely standard model since there's no delta, you know, CG, the top contribution are already extracted out. And then basically if you have new particles, they can change. And definitely it's a line because the only alpha, you know, changes here.
So this is the conclusion to the CP conserving. So
right, exactly. Yes. So this is the kind of things I mentioned before. It's like you have a change like this, which you have a stop, and then you have a spot stop plus a spot and or something like that. But I will mention that later. If one look at the phase transitions, so basically, I mean, the potential it looks like this. And the important thing that one can learn from the behavior for this is basically you need to have a phi to the cubic term which goes down. So then that goes down, then basically your potential first goes up and then goes down and then goes up by the fourth term. So the important thing is that this term, and this term is so small usually, this term must decrease with the phi increases. So basically in this case that one really needs the alpha to be bigger than zero, which means that you need a positive electroweak symmetry breaking mass square so that you get the electroweak phase transition, first order electroweak phase transition. So then in this case, one can calculate the critical condition. And to some extent that here I didn't use a gauge environment calculation here. So I mean, one should think about that. But I think I will mention that probably the trends when you compare the two cases, they didn't change much. So in this case, I mean, one can always calculate all of those things, and then you get a general formula for the general mass matrix, which you take a traces, and it's something like this.
Sorry, what is N and F?
So N is the representation for this, like for example, if it's colored, probably it's a 3 or something like that. Oh. It's just the number of, you know, scalars. F is just a function which this one you can take them to be a n by n matrix, which in the end you give a trace. So then basically, I mean, one can look at the actual weak phase transition. But the important thing is that you can find that when alpha is smaller than 0 or bigger than 0, both actually can give you a relatively positive contribution for this function f. This means that as long as your potential actually can go down, if this additional contribution from a negative alpha is too small, then they don't go up, they directly go down. So then you don't.
Could you
A is the alpha. So A is the electroweak symmetric breaking mass.
So what you are saying, if alpha is negative, what happens?
So if you only have one alpha is negative, the potential is just the direct goes down. And then there's no way that, you know, so you always couldn't get the correct run.
And now?
And the loudest is the thing that you need them to be positive.
Right.
Now the thing that if you have both,
so two different parts.
Yeah, as long as for instance, here the v prime prime, which is first they goes up, and then you can still make sure that they go down and hit the electroweak symmetry breaking critical transition, then it's still okay. And then you will find that combining the overall effect, they actually enhance the strength.
So I don't understand what is going up and what is going down. So then I write the effective potential evolution of each particle separately, right?
Yes.
So there is one that has alpha positive and that has a standard.
Yes.
And now
you have another one which.
So two questions I'm asking. So one, there is a temperature dependent term, and then there is the soft terms. What do you do with those terms? Are those included? And how?
Yeah. So what do you mean by temperature dependent term? So I think
pi of t.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think it's here. Yeah.
So what do you? So okay, pi is somewhat dependent on.
On T, which is a thermal mass term.
Correct. Now, these are strong interacting particles, right? So that pi is strong. So what are you doing with M?
This M?
Yes.
This is just the input.
Yes, but what is it?
And are you compensating
because
somehow
you
pi so that
what
you
is
can
the
get the
potential?
Yeah, the usual stop kind of trick.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you doing the compensation between m squared and pi so that you get something that is mainly phi squared?
But if you do that, no, I want to know what you're doing because there is some phenomenological implications of all this.
Yeah, so basically I think the details are in here. This is what we are choosing for the parameters. For instance, so the.
But are they strongly interacting particles?
What do you mean by strongly interacting?
They're colored objects.
They're colored objects.
Yes. Yeah.
And they still contribute strongly. Okay.
Yeah.
What is on
that
the y-axis?
Is...
I'm sorry.
So y-axis is basically, so this is just for a single particle. We're looking at how they contribute for this function f,
okay.
Which function f is somehow related to the phi over t.
My experience in the stop case is that this screening effect is very strong, right? Now your alpha is of order 1. So then how can you get such a strong contribution to it? So with another shape, with a stop case.
So you basically say that there are the screening, Debye screening effects for these.
Yeah, you have a thermal mass that's large because of its SV3.
But I think in our calculation we include this thermal mass term, which is.
So there should be something that makes it different from the stop case. In the stop case, at least we need to put m squared negative to get enough contribution.
Uh-huh.
You have more colors, perhaps you have an octet instead of.
I think in this case is that for a single positive m squared and alpha. You know the alpha phi square.
Yeah.
They didn't give you a strong enough contribution.
Yeah, but your alpha is lower than one. So, well, this is not alpha. This is 0.5. So then, and our alpha was one.
Yeah. So by itself they don't give you the strong bounds.
Okay.
But the important thing is that you introduce another alpha two.
Okay.
And this particular alpha two, for instance, they have this. 130 GeV, and then you have the additional contribution.
I'm a little lost. So we've got how many, what are alpha 1 and alpha 2? Two different scalars?
Right.
Okay. And one scalar, we agree, is not sufficient, because you don't have enough degrees of freedom, and you're not playing this game of canceling the screen.
Yeah.
But you say if I introduce a second one, even if its coupling is a little weaker,
and opposite for electroweak symmetry breaking.
Opposite
for electroweak symmetry.
Negative.
Yeah, for electroweak symmetry breaking.
Somehow this helps.
Yes. And this is because you can see that, for instance, I look at here is 0.8, but if I go to the negative direction, they help.
Okay, very good. So we need to sit down and understand. And this is just one loop, right?
Yeah.
And the Higgs is 125.
The thing that when we calculate this, all of the illustration I show, I didn't include all the logs. In the realistic, in this plot, we include all the logs. And the effects that they make this kind of effects weaker. So it's not as strong as the.
I would agree with everything apart from the fact that I'm wondering, are you sure you include the ring resonation?
I think that it's just the resummation, right?
Yes.
This is what you mean.
Yeah. So you include and then.
It's just I use a very standard,
No, I understand, but still your effect is rather strong, so that's why. Okay, very good.
So you think that from your own experience or stop, even that we don't require so much.
But it looks like your alphas are smallish.
Yeah, but the thing that we
you're not canceling the pi function, so that's the.
And you're not canceling the pi function, so it looks like your effect should be screened.
I see. So basically, I understand. I understand what you mean.
Yeah. Okay. But now I'm starting to, because if this is true, so maybe there is a trick one can. Okay, continue. Then we can discuss.
But as we have already discussed, probably the MSM we don't save it to somehow. But
well, I don't know because the research
suggests we might. Okay. So anyway, so in the past, Carlos and his company had this 90 or 100 GeV very light stop, and it just requires that you have almost zero mixings, right? Which is very easy to understand. You get your alpha bigger than zero. So if you have a huge mixing, then off the angle of pieces, you have a minus, then that actually have an alpha which is negative. So now we probably change this into.
By the way, that was not our case, right? Our case is small mixing.
Not exact zero mixing?
Well, and then alpha is positive.
Right. This is what you.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that you have very large mixing, then your alpha is negative.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah. So that's why in your talk I say probably just from one mass eigenstate is much easier to understand. So basically in this case I have 115 light stop at that time. We propose this scenario 200 light stop spotting.
Okay, but this is my argument. So how comes these guys? Okay, this would be fantastic if this is just phase transition you're talking about. Okay,
well,
continue.
So, but the phase transition here, what are you saying exactly? That you are doing.
So, he's not playing the game that we were playing. he doesn't take a mu negative, yes?
No, I see that, yeah. But I don't understand then how you survive if you are not canceling the
apparently there's some magic here that we have to understand.
At a very rough speaking, that first you have one scalar which has a positive mass square, and then they already set the phase transition. And the second one, which has a negative mass square, they somehow just delay the going down behavior, and that sort of make your phi bigger.
Okay.
So, but still, if you do something like this, since the spotting and the stop, the left-hand side, they are related to each other. So if you look at the fourth spotting point function, so then you have a color breaking and all of those problems. But still, I mean, one can definitely has high scale things to help this, and probably add a vector quark or extend your gauge group. So in any sense, I think if this work is kind of like an effective MSM, you still can reopen the
so boundary. Can you say what would be the effective MSSM that you're thinking there? So you are using the stop.
So basically, there is one stop is light, and then another spotting is light.
The spotting cancels the Bloom fission enhancement.
Yeah.
Because it comes always in negative sign. That is
true. Yeah. Which is basically the kind of plot here that you go this. It's kind of like that. And then now we talk about the second case, which is the electric weak phase transition.
Can you, in 10 minutes, can you?
Yeah, I could. In NMSM? So now, what if it's not a Higgs portal? So basically, I have a Higgs, actually mixed with other scalars necessary for strong first order phase transition. So in this case, a simple generic realization is just Higgs mixed with a singlet after electric weak symmetry breaking. And this indeed is especially for many of the extensions for SUSY models. So now I choose the probably nowadays the most popular models for those SUSY believers. That is, this big NMSM with scale invariance. So one can have this potential, a super potential, and a very complicated potential, and then you just do it. But don't laugh. So basically, even though things are very complicated, there are still some structures which I can show you in a very easy way. So basically, for all of those things, I choose the so-called Goldstone basis in the sense that you always rotate, some of your Higgses to get the full wave, the other one is inert. Mm-hmm. So in this case, I rotate in a way that the S2 is a purely standard model, like they get the full wave. And also the P1 is eaten by the WZ. And then you get all of those mass spectrums. And one key thing that one should learn is that, so this is the effective MA. And this M33 is kind of the light Higgs which mix with the 125. So this one is the heavy one which is very heavy. And usually the important thing is that when you do those scans and go through all the full details of 125, you will find that the pattern always prefers that this M23, which is proportional to this parameter CA, is always small. So it's kind of that a general theorem that the singlet standard model mixing is always small, just preferred by data. And then you have this MA, and also as we well know, this one actually bounds all of the CP order Higgses. So the important thing is that there is a very important parameter which in the end we would call it this the phase transition parameter, which is R kappa we define. And this R kappa is the 4 kappa VS over A kappa. So basically you can actually always replace all of the A kappa into R kappas. Since A kappa only appears in some very small places.
Is that 4 kappa? Sorry.
4 kappa VS? Over A kappa?
Thank you.
So the important thing is that in this case, you will find that your M as 3-3, which is a singlet masses, they get this combination. And the important thing is this combination always gets its minimum value from -1 to 0. So they always get the smallest one, which I will use this to interpret the full spectrum correlation. And similar things for this, you are finding a positive kappa for this always suppress the CPU order Higgs mass. So now we look at the patterns of the phase transition. So definitely, in principle, you should have three types of phase transition patterns. One that you first go to the S-breaking wave, and then go to electric weak symmetry breaking wave, or you first go to the electric weak symmetry breaking wave, and then go to the full wave, which S also get a wave. Or it's just one-step phase transition. And for the second one, our scan didn't show much of those points. I guess mostly that they probably, the relative large S does not prefer these. So basically, you know, we just considered the first and the third. And clearly, I will call it the H1, H2 scenario, which is the lightest or second lightest. And clearly, the H3 scenario, in principle, is possible. But as we know, many people already write a paper saying that it's almost impossible. So what can we learn from that? So I mean, I have been actually reading just many of these electric weak phase transition papers. But I mean, I think one intuition is that in the end, do you actually have any kind of things that you can just very quickly get a sense on what is the whether this guy has a strong further phase transition or weak further weak phase transition? And definitely, this is not that if your coupling is strong, then you get a strong first order transition. Definitely not at all. The important thing is that usually, especially when you have a very strong first order phase transition, you always get your zero temperature, the wave difference to be small. Then you just change, use the temperature correction to change that a little bit. Then you have the strong first order phase transition. And so basically, one can just assume that the wave that get a zero temperature the same that the wave I get a finite temperature. I mean, it's just an approximation. So basically, in this case of symmetric minus the full symmetric one, I change this into the TC, and then I change this one. And then basically, that at the critical
realistic.
You mean this goes to this? You don't understand which one?
Yeah, it's an approximation that the first derivative is.
Right. But the important thing, I forget the English name for that theorem. So basically, that you have a point here, you have a point here. This is your function, and always there is a point that you know. There is a point which I call the TR. This T equals zero. T equals TC. There's always a point that this point, the derivative is just the same that you know.
Oh, TR, I didn't see your.
But anyway, it's just a TR, it's just some kind of coefficients, which give, actually this is TR anyway, which gives you the, you know, some slope there. So basically this tells that to some extent your strength is basically proportional to this 1 over delta t. And definitely one should think about the full gauge invariant calculation for this. So here I use some examples which I scan. H1 scenario, type 1, type 3, type 1, type 3, they just perfectly agree with.
What is on the vertical axis?
The vertical axis is gamma c, which is this.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is the zero temperature difference for the valve.
You said that the result is in agreement with your possible simulation. Did you say that?
Sorry?
And is your result in agreement?
Right. Definitely, they agree. You see? The bigger is kind of like one over delta V effects, right?
green lights are rough estimated.
Yeah, but the thing that here is definitely, I mean, this is just a very, very okay, rough estimation.
Green is your rough estimation, red numerical results.
No, actually, it's the type 1 phase transition and type 3 phase transition. So if you have a one step phase transition, probably it's better. So the two step phase transition, they somehow go like this. But the important thing is that I just want to say that the smaller your delta V is, the bigger the phase transition is. So basically now, so analyze the phase transition is simple. You just look at a delta V at 0 temperature. So this is the delta V at tree level. I mean, just do something. And the important thing is that, so Vs actually is the value of the true wave with the values on the S direction. While Us actually is the intermediate steps, which they have the value at the S direction. So you are fine that actually you solve all of those things, you are fine that either they go like this or don't go like this, which means that delta either is 0 or minus 2. And so which means that US is always kind of goes to plus minus VS. And in this limit, you see this. So in the end, your delta V tree is just this 4 V squared M H squared over 4. So I call this the doublet limit. So basically, when your R kappa goes to positive infinity or negative infinity, they always go to this doublet limit. And this one is always too big that you don't have the strong first order phase transition. So basically here, it's too big. But the important thing is that actually, when you have a finite deltas, actually you will find that those effects actually can make them smaller. And especially when they pass through zero, that's exactly the place you actually have a strong first order phase transition. But this is tree level results. So basically the loop levels actually will give some corrections and I throw away all the points which didn't give you a true electric weak wave. And this is just like an invert plot for this. And definitely the important thing that you don't see any plots here, any points here, which is positive R kappa, and this is because then you must have a positive mass graph for the CP order fixes. And also, usually, I mean, here you didn't see any kind of big phase transition for the H1 scenario. Because in this case, you have this point, which lies between the minus 1 and 0. And as I have said, this always makes your M33 to be the smallest. So in this case, they always tend to make the M3 too small. So they are smaller than 125. So basically, they go to the H2 scenario. That's why in H1 scenario, you don't have those points here. But overall, and very easily, you learn that in the H1 scenario, it requires my R kappa to be positive like this. And the H2 scenario, because in this case, you can have a very light M33, it has either the R kappa is around minus 1, or R kappa is go to from 2 to 0.
So Jing, I think we're going to need to wrap up.
Yeah. So I quickly finish. And then, I go to type 3 case, you do this almost the same thing. But the thing that then basically is around minus 3 over 4. And usually, a positive R kappa, they just don't make the S direction wave too deep, so it's not, they change it into type 1. So the important thing is look at the spectrum. So basically, strong first order phase transition somehow makes them light, but there are two distinct regions. So basically, the important thing that you can see that there are two distinct regions. One is the R kappa smaller than 0, one is the R kappa bigger than 0. So the important thing that for R kappa bigger than 0, which is the positive region, they always actually make your CP order Higgs light. If on the other hand, they go to the negative region, they always make your CP even Higgs to be very light. So it's a very complementary result. So in the end, it's just extremely simple. You expect either a light CP even or a light CP order Higgs. And this is very challenging in the searches, especially here, I didn't go to consider the CP PQ limit. So PQ limit should be a separate consideration, which I'm working on. But the important thing is that how to detect them. So basically, well, probably the TT bar actually was some other things. And this is the thing that for, I mean, to be honest.
Skip these. Okay. Just go to
the conclusion. Yeah. So then we go to the prospects. I want to think about some of those things for dark matter and baryogenesis. So the thing that we have electric weak baryogenesis, they're very deeply connected to the Higgs physics. Very, very connected. And definitely the collider searches will really tell us a lot. And similar things, dark matter, WIMPs, or other kind of scenarios, you know, you can at the collider to play with it. Low energy CP violating experiment, all of those things, you have to understand the nuclear physics, you know, you have to deal all of those numerical things. They are quite similar things like dark matter direct detection. And we have dark matter indirect detections. On the other hand, the future gravitational waves can tell that actually what happened for strong first order phase transition. What's that their signal on the cosmology side? And another common thing that overall, that many of the inputs from the astrophysics side had to be well understood. Both actually had a huge, you know, uncertainties one can play with and various things one can depend on the astrophysics side. And we should, you know, it's much fun to explore. And lastly, so I just do an inspiral search. So this is the baryogenesis, all baryon asymmetries. And we find that there's 1,141 papers. So and how about dark matter? 11,139. So it's kind of
leptogenesis.
Huh?
You should have added leptogenesis.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's a very good
suggestion. So we get omega dark matter over omega baryon. That's about 5, and we're good.
Now we
add
the elliptic possibilities.
Okay. So anyway, I think it's probably equally important to think about how ourselves are originally generated, right?
Have you tested particle genesis?
we should try. So anyway, the
genesis probably would be.
It's completely my mistake.
You can do it immediately.
Hydrogenesis and
exogenesis. Yeah, there are some mixed genesis actually for both. You know, core genesis.
Oh, any cytogenesis, and the guys explain wimpy body genesis.
So anyway. So basically, I would say that this is a very interesting area.
Leptogenesis.
I'm thinking it's time for beer.
8:17.
Okay. So 0.2. I mean, 0.115 or to 0.2.
I told you the ratio is 5 to 1. Dark matter to the baryon. 5 to 1.
So, but probably we know that the new Planck results decrease the dark matter number, and you know, so we should look at the trends, you know. Yeah, I'm joking anyway. So but still, I think probably this is a very important thing to attract people and work on that, and it relates to many different aspects of the experiment, and you know, has very few. Very well, future detection possibility. So. Anyway, so the
probably collapse nuggets.
Yeah. So now I just stop here. So.
All right. So maybe we should save the rest for after. Let's. Why don't we thank Jing?
I think everybody wants to talk about.